My guru, Mother Hamilton, always started with a reading for Papa. So I thought I would read from Communion with You, Eternal Beloved. Where is there sweeter in the world than to hold communion with your Eternal Beloved? He is your never-failing companion and friend. He resides in the inner chamber of your heart and is also present everywhere about you. He is the soul of your soul, the life of your life. In the absolute sense, you and He are one. If this love of intimate comradeship with your Beloved does not inspire your life, even if you have all other things, your life is lived in vain. See your Beloved in the face of all beings and creatures. Verily, He has become the whole universe. Wherever you turn, there He is. The bliss of His presence is inexpressible. Why run away from Him and seek to attain peace in a loop? Allow your life to mingle with His life. That is the universal life. He is a calm, serene, changeless spirit, and at the same time, He is a world player. He dances in the hearts of all beings and creatures. He is at once wisdom, power, and love. How beautiful are the images in which He appears. He is the essence of all grandeur and majesty. He is the smile on the face of the innocent child and the power that sits on the brow of the king. He is the love that bubbles in the heart of the saint. He is the radiance that shines upon the whole creation. Who can describe His greatness? Why talk of Him in terms of abstract philosophy while He is the very nectar which you can drink and enjoy? He permeates your physical frame and tingles in every atom of it. What always struck me about Papa and my own Gurudev is that they make God so immediate, so present, so available. And I think one of the things that's difficult for us, particularly when we've been on the path for a while, is that everyone hits a plateau. Plateau is you're climbing, you're going higher, and suddenly you just seem to flatten out. You don't go any deeper, you don't soar any higher. And as a result of that, you can get a little bit lackadaisical, you know, not very intense in our sadhana. And so suddenly God seems like a distant prospect. Someplace up in heaven, someplace out there, someplace the great saints can experience. But you know, not me. Not me. It's not my time. It's not for me in this moment at this time. So this is delusion. This is something that's the little devil that's on our shoulder that's whispering to us. Don't try too hard. Don't think you can attain that because it's too far away. You're not pure enough. You're not good enough. You don't practice sadhana deep enough. Therefore, not for you. This is delusion whispering in our ear. It's not true. It's not true. And the thing is to really take Papa's words at their true value. That God is with you, He's moving in you, even right now. As Mother Hamilton would say, you could not breathe, you could not think, you could not have your being without God constantly moving inside of you. The fact that you're alive, the fact that you breathe, the fact that you have thoughts, is active proof that God is moving through you now. Now, the question is, are we conscious of it or not? And so the ego mind inserts itself in there and says, no, no, you're just you. You're out here someplace. And you can't have God. You can't be God consciousness. Because that's for saints, that's for somebody up there. None of the saints tell us that. They all tell us that God is moving inside of us. So if we have that thought, if we have that feeling that God is somehow distant, then recognize that for what it is. It's a lie. in the Christian scriptures, Jesus says that the devil is a liar and a thief from the very beginning. And the liar and the thief is that delusive voice, that separation, that says, you are you. You have your thoughts, you have yourself, you have darkness.
No, I think from the outside somebody has switched off.
No.
One face is gone.
Yeah, I think that's backup. So that is the thing that we have to overcome, is this notion of separation. So how do we go about doing that? When you think, this is me, this is who I am, and even if it's an idea of separation, I'm separate from God, I'm not one with God, then recognize God is in that thought itself. Even though it's a delusive thought. Whatever is moving, maybe you have aches and pains in your knees, your joints, it's difficult to get up sometimes, and yet that is God moving in you too, because Papa said that pain and bliss are the same. When I was here in 1998 and 1999, I went through some period of sickness. And I had high fever, a lot of body pain. And so I was talking to Papa. I was lying in bed and in this feverish state. And I said, Papa, you said that pain and bliss are the same. But that's hard to conceive sometimes. Right now, I don't see this pain as being God. And then, suddenly, this feeling lifted me up. This experience lifted me up, and I saw Papa with a big toothless grin, and we started dancing. We were holding hands, and we started dancing around and around, and I felt bliss. I still felt pain in the body, but I also felt bliss. And so the two were not dissimilar. The two were not absolutely separated. So whatever experience that we have, even if, say, we are experiencing some depression, some dullness, and we identify and we say, okay, God, you're expressing yourself through this dullness in me right now. And we make that connection and we feel that that's God who's expressing itself through that moment, through the pain, through the dullness, through the peace, through the bliss, whatever experience that we have, we always relate it back to God. And in that way, we can get rid of the ego. He's the middleman. He always wants to insert himself between ourselves and God. And we say, all right, whatever I think, whatever I feel, whatever I experience in this moment, that too is coming from God, because there's nothing but one. There's nothing but God everywhere. And so I think in my mind, I relate that back to God, and I don't make it separate. See, if we're feeling a little down, if we're feeling separated from God, that's where the ego can get in and say, see, you're separated. You're not one with God. But it's not true. It's a lie. And we say, so even in this pain, even in this separation, even in this dullness, you're expressing yourself in me as that in this moment. When we do that, we make an instant connection with God. And when we make that connection with God, it changes the experience. We may still have some dullness. We may still have pain. But suddenly, God becomes mingled into it. It's like the confluence, a prayag of two rivers. And suddenly we introduce the divine presence into the human presence. My own Guru Dev would say that I'm, in speaking of her own state of realization, I am both human and divine. Because oftentimes we think, well, if I were in a divinely realized state, I would no longer be human. And yet, we look at Papa, we look at Mataji, we look at Swami Satchidananda, and they had very human elements to them, didn't they? Is that sacrilegious to say? I don't think so. They had human elements, but they were completely divine. They realized, just like a hand that goes into a glove, and then the fingers can operate in that glove, so too, God inserts himself into our personalities. And he can operate through our thoughts, he can operate through our personality, he can operate through our being. And suddenly, it's this one whole piece of ourselves that's complete. We don't have to think that, well, if I have any humanness in me at all, then there's nothing that can be divine. What we realize, as the mind is purified, is that it is God himself who expresses himself through our personalities, through ourselves, and all of that idea of separation is completely removed and is no longer present. So when my Guru Dev came here, she met Papa in 1954 on the world tour. You can read about that in World is God. In Seattle, Washington, Papa came there. And a story about the man who called Mother and said that you have to meet Papa. He was a businessman, but a disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda in America. So, but he was a very practical businessman, and he heard about Papa coming. So he said, Papa, I want you to speak to my business club. It was a bunch of people, businessmen who got together. Sometimes they would have speakers. So Papa came, and what did he speak about? He said, greed is wrong. You should want God more than this world. Desire for things of the world. Well, Bob was starting to sink down, and he said, oh, these are businessmen. They're all my friends. He's starting to sink down. What will they think of me? You know, why did they invite this fellow to come and berate us? You know, so that's what he's thinking. He's so concerned about it that after the talk, he drove around and drove around the city. He didn't want to go back to his office because he was sure he's going to have telephone calls. Why did you invite this fellow? Who do you think you are? They would be so angry with him. So, he's driving. Finally, he says, well, I have to go back to my office. So he drives back to his office. When he gets there, there's all this stack of notes. Oh, no. What did they say? I can't. So he finally picks one up. I'm so glad you invited Swami Ram Dass. Such an inspiring talk. And one note, telephone note after another. Oh, I'm so glad that you invited him. And we got so much benefit from him. So he called Mother Hamilton, and he lived in Minneapolis. Mother is out in Seattle. And he says, you have to meet this Swami Ram Dass. He's wonderful. So Mother said, oh, he can stay at our home. No, the crowd is too big. There's Swami Satchidananda. They didn't say how many. They said there's just too many people. Mother said later, we could have easily accommodated. She really felt she would have loved to have had everybody. But she went, and when she entered into the hotel where Papa was staying, the door was slightly ajar, and she looked in through this door, and Papa looked out and saw her, and he started dancing around in circles. And she'd never seen anybody do that before. So she was taken aback a little bit by Papa and how he was responding. And then she came in, and she said, oh, you know, Papa, I've come here. And she sat down, and she was just lifted up. And Papa said that she went into samadhi right there at his feet. And so she was so lifted up in his presence. And she came to her home, and he spoke to everybody. And during the talk, he said that a saint can transmit his grace through three different ways. He can do it through sight, he can do it through touch, he can do it through a thought. So after the talk, Mother said, Papa, will you bless everybody who's here? And Papa, speaking as he speaks, you know, he says, Ram Dass has committed himself. So everybody came up who was there, and he touched them and blessed them. And before Papa had come, Mother's own guru, Paramahansa Yogananda, left the body already. And Mother is praying so deeply because she had gone into Nirvikalpa Samadhi by that time, but had not achieved Sahaja Samadhi. So she knew that there was something more for her to go through. So she had prayed to God. She says, God, you must send me someone, or you yourself must lift me up into this highest stage of consciousness. And so God told her in her meditation, I will come to see you face to face. I will come to see you face to face. So she went with that, and when Papa was at her home and he blessed everybody, he said, you must be very happy now. You must be very happy. And she said, of course we are when God is here. And he said, well, as God who has come to see God face to face, and her hair stood up on her neck and her just tingles all over, that's exactly God had said, I will come to see you face to face. So she felt that God had sent Papa to take her to her final stage of realization. And so he had invited her to come to the ashram. So in 1957, she and her husband, Ralph, they sold everything that they had. They sold their home, they sold their furniture. Most people in their late 50s, they're thinking about retirement and so many different things like that. They sold everything, and they came to India only. And not many people came to India at that time, so many Westerners. So they came here, and you can read about so many of those talks in Gospel of Swami Ram Dass. But Swami Satchitananda told me, he says, everything they talked about, I didn't write in there. And then Mother started into a series of experiences at one point where she went what she called the mystical crucifixion. The mystical crucifixion. And when she went through those experiences, God would lead her to the Bible. She would just open up the Bible, and God would just show her, say, see, this is the experience you've just gone through, what's written about here. And all the stories about Jesus are actually allegories. That the crucifixion that he goes through, that so many of the things that are described in there are actually symbolic stories about what every person goes through, from the human to the divine. And Mother, at one point, she asked Papa. She says, Papa, because Papa was talking about the scriptures like history, like that's something that happened a long time ago. And she said, Papa, she says, is it true what God has told me, that these scriptures are the description of what every human goes through from the human to the divine? And Papa said, you have made him say it. And Swami Satchitananda wrote in there, that was a moment of great truth. A great truth. So many things that she came away with, and she continued to go through many experiences when she came back from America. When she left India, she was completely paralyzed from the neck down. She couldn't brush her own hair. She couldn't get up. She had to be carried and put into the train. And this was a stage of the mystical crucifixion that she went through. And what she told us is that none of us would have to go through all the things she went through. But that these are the descriptions of what we go through. And so when I came to Mother, I met Mother in 1974. And the first night, she read from Papa Ram Dass. I had never heard of Papa Ram Dass before that. And then she played on her harmonium, and she led us in Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. And she sang it in a way, she would sing it, Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om, Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om. And then we would sing it back to her. I heard this melody, and I wasn't even sure I liked the melody. It was kind of haunting to me. But I never forgot it. And afterwards I left from there, and that kept singing itself in my head again and again and again. So from the very beginning, she introduced me to Papa, she introduced me to Ram Dass, And then Ram Nam became just a constant feature in my mind. I couldn't forget it. It went on itself over and over and over again. And the thing in our chanting of Ram Nam, we can be chanting with our lips, but our brain maybe is wandering here and there. But when we feel it in the heart, when we feel that God is awakening himself in our own heart, we feel the peace, we feel the love, we feel the joy, those should be the hallmarks. It's like a science. Huh? And we're the laboratory. Our brains, our bodies, our beings, they're the laboratory that we enact this holy science. And in science, you start out with a proposition. You start out with some theory. You say, I think this is the way that it works. Then you go about to set up some circumstances where you can prove or disprove that theory. So the theory is, as Papa tells us, if you chant Ram Nam, then you will be lifted up into peace, into bliss, into joy. And that's how you prove it. That's what makes it a science. Now, it's a laboratory of our own beings. We can't get a microscope out and look at the little cells, or we can't look at the atoms or see whether they're spiritually charged or not. But we can experience it in the laboratory of our own beings, in our own minds, in our own feelings. And so when we experience that peace, when we experience that bliss, when we experience that joy, we are proving to ourselves that God exists. And that is God experience. And you may say, but I want so much more. And of course, we're like the little chrysalis that has been formed when we enter into our sadhana. And it allows this transformation into this beautiful butterfly. But the transformation takes some time. It takes a process. Unless we come in like a Ramana Maharshi who's a 16-year-old boy, and one day he just gets this fear of death. Okay, what is this death? He lays himself down. All right, I'm dead. I'm not breathing. I'm dead. So who am I? And he knows who he is. When he gets up from that, he's in a completely realized state. Now, a lot of us would say, oh, I'd like that. Lay down, think about that, get back up, and you're in a realized state. Most of us, it's a process of purification. He earned that experience from other times, came back to have that moment of awakening. For most of us, it's a lot more purification. But what we should be having is peace, joy, love, light. These are the qualities that tell us that we're making proper progress in our sadhana. If we're not getting these things, it means we've hit one of those plateaus. We've evened off, leveled off. Maybe we've even gone downhill a little bit before. Well, I had so much enthusiasm before. Now, I'm just kind of coasting. But in sadhana, you're not ever completely, either you're going downhill or you're going up. Never completely flat. So we can feel like, okay, I'm just coasting a little, but actually we're going downhill. If you're ever trudging up a hill and you get tired and think, oh, maybe I've gone far enough, and you turn around and start going back downhill, it feels better initially, doesn't it? But you haven't made it to the peak. You don't know what's at the top yet. So what is so beautiful about Papa's example, Mataji's example, Mother Hamilton's example, is that they wanted to get to the top only. They didn't let themselves get sidetracked, left or right. They went straight to the top. So if we don't have that kind of intense desire, then we can pray to God to give us more of that, to give us the grace of desire. There was a time when I felt like I didn't have any love at all in my heart. None. Flat. Deadline. Just like that. Nothing. couldn't tell you what love was, didn't think that I had it for anything or anyone. So I told God, okay, it is said that you are all love. So you must give me this love. You must show me what this love is. So he had me start reading about Ramakrishna, the gospel of Ramakrishna. So much love, so much desire for God. And also St. Francis. Also so much love, such a powerful determination to experience God only. So I'm reading about these, but I'm still not feeling any love at all. And then one night, I used to meditate up on the mountaintop. And as I sat there, I could look out and see the city lights down below. And I just felt this tremendous pain in my heart, tremendous pain. So much so, I just felt like it was going to break somehow, my whole heart. So I went up night after night, and that pain just seemed to get more and more tense until I thought, I can't handle this anymore, I can't take this. And I feel like I'm going to burst apart. And then one night, finally, something broke. Mother called it the Gordian knot. The Gordian knot that exists here in the heart center. And that broke open, and suddenly, just this tremendous tsunami wave of love just came through. And I felt this love in the air, it was in the particles in the air, it was in the dust. I was down in the dirt, I was swimming in the dirt. I was kissing the branches of the trees and the bushes, and I was mad with this love. I thought later on, it's probably a very good thing I was in a remote place at nighttime. Otherwise, they would have gotten the butterfly net out and got me and taken me to some mental institution because I was off my rocker. But I just got this love, I was in an ocean of love. Now, it's not that reality had changed. It's not that God changed. It's something in me changed. But it started with that intense and deep prayer, God, you have to show me what love is, because I haven't a clue. Now, with any of God's qualities, we can do the same. Intensify our desire. God, you have to show me what this bliss is. You have to show me what this light is, what this love is, whatever it is that's calling to you, to intensify your urgency to God, that you must experience that, you must have it. Because if you don't, you're going to miss out. Many of us have gotten to the age where we see how time just goes faster and faster and faster. And suddenly you realize you're closer to the end than you are the beginning. And if we don't do it now, then when exactly? I know so many people, they tell me, oh, when I retire, then I'll have time. Then I'll do my sadhana. But you know what they tell me when they get into their retirement? I don't know how I ever had time to work. I'm so busy now. I go here, I go there, I have to do all of these different things. And they don't make any more time for God than they did when they were working all the time. It's a lie that's told to us that it's for some other time, it's for some other place. It's not here, it's not now. And I say, if not here and not now, then when? And you're just fooling yourself if you think there's some future time when it's going to be more available or easier, or any other of the excuses that you think for yourself. But don't think that God is far away. He is the breath behind your own breath, the thought behind your own thought, the feeling behind your own feeling. He's so close. The problem isn't that God is so far away. The problem is that God is so close to us. He's so familiar to us that we don't recognize him. It seems commonplace to us in some way. Paramahansa Yogananda, he used to say, particularly with married couples, he says, don't become over familiar. don't become over familiar with each other. We do that in relationships, whether it's mother and daughter, or whether it's husband and wife, or children and parents. We get over familiar. We take too much for granted, and we lose the sacredness within that relationship. And we lose a lot when we lose that. We've lost that with God. We've lost the feeling of sacredness with God. We take God for granted. We take life for granted. Oh yes, this is my life. It's an ordinary life. Here, I'm getting up. I'm doing the same thing I did yesterday. You see? And it's like we're flatlined. It's like we're dead. We're not alive. And so to wake up, to arise, to awake, as it says in the Gita, huh? To arise, to awake, wake up. Wake up to the divinity that is inherent in you right now. That you could not breathe in this moment, you could not have a thought, could not have a feeling if God were not with you already. Moving in you, thinking through you, feeling through you. You see how close and intimate God is. Not far away. That's a delusive thought. It's a vidya, separation, ignorance. So dispel with that. Get rid of that. So I think that's what God had to say tonight. So you're all my teachers. How did it go? Are there any questions or thoughts, comments, anything that I've talked about? Is it a hard thing to think that God is with you now? Is that hard? Does anybody have different? Not sure if that's true.
We may think it, but we're not really convinced.
Uh-huh. So part of us thinks and part of us doesn't. So what's the solution to that then, do you think? Yeah. I think to intensify, to ask God to intensify, because purification is it, huh? That's how we... So we ask God to intensify our desire. I wanted two things. I had two criteria. I didn't think of it in this way till later. But when I started on the path towards realization, I had two criteria. One is, I was in pain. God put me into a kind of spiritual pain that I couldn't shake off. And I knew nothing in the world was going to satisfy me or remove that pain. So, the removal of the pain is bliss. So my first demand, my first criteria for realization was bliss. The second was truth. I didn't want to just learn a philosophy. I just didn't want to learn how to parrot somebody else's words. I wanted to know the truth inside of myself, and I wanted to know it so deeply that it would remove all doubt. All doubt. I knew, as Mother would say, I know and I know that I know. That deep, that embedded. Papa said it's in the cells, huh? In the reading that we had tonight. It goes right into the cells of your being. So those were the two criteria that I had for realization. So we start out with some faith. We start out with some, I think that that's true. Otherwise we wouldn't even be here at this ashram, would we? We have some notion, I think that that's true. But it just starts out as a thought oftentimes. And so gradually, with experience, more and more, we begin to get really convinced that it is the truth. But I want to get so convinced of it that it's in the cells of my being completely. And no doubt is left at all. So if there is some doubt, that just means there's a little more purification to happen. And say, okay, go deeper. You know, Swamiji's book, Dive Deeper, Soar Higher. Go deeper, soar higher. What keeps us from doing that? It's fear. I think every time we can trace it back, there's some fear. even when we want God, even when we want bliss, there's some part of us who holds ourselves back because we're afraid. I remember talking to one lady. She was there on the night that Papa said, because Mataji was getting after Papa and saying, Papa, she says, other than myself, nobody's getting this complete God realization. You need to see to it that others get it as well. And Papa says, it's no easy thing, you know, what you're asking here. So, but one day, Papa said, you know, he says, today, Ramdas will grant full God realization to anybody who comes forward and surrenders themselves completely. Nobody came forward. Three times Papa offered up. Nobody came forward. So I talked to one person who was there, and she says, I was in college at the time, and she thought, I really want to be a teacher. Now, in her mind, she couldn't be a teacher and God realized. See how the ego inserts itself in there. So she held herself back because she wanted to complete teaching college and go on to be a teacher. So, you know, later on, Mataji was talking to Papa about that, and she says, Papa, you can't fool me. On the outside, you are saying come forward, but on the inside, you are preventing everyone from coming forward. See how beautifully Mataji goes to it. But what holds us back is fear. We're attached to something, or we're afraid something's going to be taken away. What if I give myself to God, and I end up worse off than where I started? That thought is there. Or what if I, because there's so much talk about ego is destroyed, ego is killed, well, I won't be there any longer. So we start holding back. I don't know, do I want that? The essential question is, do I trust in God enough to surrender myself to Him and trust that everything will not only be all right, but will be better than ever? But you see, we don't. And it's not just a simple question. We can say, well, I do, and that is what I want. But there's many parts to ourselves, isn't there? And there are some parts of ourselves that are afraid, that hold back. So we figure out other things to do. We just we get busy with other things, everything else. I remember there was a time when I'd sit for meditation and chanting, and such a fear came up in me. I couldn't believe how powerful this fear was. I wanted to be anywhere but there, sitting on my meditation blanket. And I had to fight so hard to stay there, day after day. This went on for months. Couple of years total. Such fear was there. Now, I couldn't explain to you why that fear came up in me, but it was powerful. And I had to be willing to fight through that fear and stick with it in order to get beyond. Well, I think a lot of us get to a certain plateau and we get there and we don't challenge, we don't go deeper, we don't soar higher. And every time we can look at it, we can say some fear has kicked in here and is not allowing me to go further. And we have to identify that and name it for what it is. That is ignorance. That's Maya, that's avidya, that is keeping me from going further. God, you must plant the seed in me. You must fire me up to where I will overcome that fear and no longer be complacent, no longer hold myself back until I know in every cell of my being that this is the truth. I believe it, but not all of me believes it.
It's not 100%.
Not 100%. Therefore, that just tells us, okay, as Swami Satchidananda would say, more sadhana. More practice. But challenge that. Find what's holding me back. We can do a little analysis of it, huh? What is holding me back? Why am I not going deeper? Why am I not soaring higher? What's keeping me back? And I think a little introspection will find out why that's so. And then challenge it. Say, I'm not going to accept this. I'm not going to accept it. And then we can ask for God for help. Please, give me the intensity of devotion. Intensity of desire to know you. Make you more tempting than this world. Make you a more powerful magnet than the fear is that's keeping me back. Any other thoughts, observations?
Even the prayer is sometimes weak. It's not strong.
That the prayer?
It doesn't come.
You know, if I told you, some of you this may not apply to, if I told you, if you were awake at tomorrow morning at 5 a.m., there will be a man at your door with a $1 million check. The $1 million check. Do you think you would be sleeping at 5 a.m.? No. Excited. Oh. You know, even if you thought, oh, I'll give it to the ashram, or I'll do something good with it, or excitement would be there. Why? Anticipation of something good. But when it comes to God, particularly if we've been on the path for a little while, do we have that kind of anticipation? Do we think, oh, another day, I'll just stay on this plateau. It's not bad, it's not good, it's just, oh, like that, not so much. We're not anticipating what God is. We're not adequately bringing it into our hearts and minds, all that God is. When God is the greatest treasure, bigger, better, more fantastic than anything else in this world. If I tell you, you have a favorite subject in this world, you have a hobby, you have something that you like to do, you know, and maybe the businessman going out on the golf course and, you know, bringing a score down, it might be anything at all. That's a tiny little subset of what God is. That pleasure, whatever your favorite thing in this world, your favorite food, your favorite pastime, your favorite person, whatever it is, it's a tiny little subset of what God is. And God is that much more. And it's infinite. Now the mind can't even conceive what infinite is. But it's infinite. And it's never ending. It's ever new. We hear those words, but do they penetrate? Do they take us deeper? Do we believe them? Now, just like the person, the materially minded person who says, oh, $1 million in the morning. Oh, I can't wait till 5 o'clock. Can we feel that way towards God? In the same way that a miser would, that $1 million is coming in the morning. Can we treasure God that much? And if we don't, why not? Why not? What keeps us back? Something, maybe we had it at one time. Maybe we were very excited about the path, but oh, it kind of got dull after a while. Something entered in that made us think that God is not God. That God is boring. God is not boring. You could think of plugging in, and it's 50,000 watts. That's God. That's not boring. The intelligence, the revelations, the bliss, the joy, 50,000 watts. That is not boring. That's not commonplace. And yet, what do? We don't adequately conceive of it. We don't appreciate what God is. That's where we become over familiar with God. All my life, it's just this kind of sameness. That's death. Spiritual death. Right there. God is ever new joy. My Paramparam Guru, Sri Yukteswarji, said, God is ever new joy. And when you have ever new joy, you have God. Now sometimes we think, oh, God is big, huge revelations of light and all of these kinds of things. But just think of ever new joy coming up inside of you. No particular reason. Nothing has happened that's made you particularly joyful. It's just there. You see it in the smallest of flowers. You see it in other people's faces. You see it everywhere. There's a doorway to God in absolutely everything that is. Now, why would we not be excited about that? Why would we not be striving for that? And the answer is, the ego mind inserts itself in there. And it begins to say, maybe it's not my time. But it's a lie. This is your time. And God is ever seeking to awaken you. Jesus tells a story of the son, two sons, father. And the one son says, Father, I want my inheritance now. He's kind of a naughty boy. But he is of age. So the father said, all right, here's your inheritance. The boy goes off, he spends a wild time, lots of parties, everything, lives in distant towns, spends everything. One day, he's got no money, he's got nothing, and he's trying to get some scraps from where they throw food out for the animals. He thinks, even my father's servants live better than I do. I'm going to eat humble pie, go back to my father, tell him, I'll live here as a servant, please take me back. So he's gradually making his way back. He's gone a long ways away. His father sees him a great distance away. He runs out to his son. He said, oh, my son, who I thought was dead, you live. And he says, kill the fatted calf. He brings the son in as if he never did anything wrong. And Jesus says, that's what God is like. If he sees us making any effort at all, he runs to us, gathers us up in his arms, and takes us into that heavenly realm. So if we make that effort, if we make that prayer to God, come into my heart. Come into this temple not made with hands. Inhabit me. Awaken that love for you. That it's God's grace that gives us the ability to love God. And that He'll take us to Himself. This is the greatest thing. And when we feel excited about that, when we feel enthusiastic, when we feel that God is here and now, not some, oh, I have to practice sadhana for so many years, and then eventually maybe I'll realize God when I'm a very old person, maybe when I'm dead, then I'll know the truth. See how we put it far away. It's not true. It's a lie. God is here. God is now. And it's a fulfillment of all of your heart's desires.
So I want to ask one question. I'm just listening to you. I'm just seeing you, but my mind is not with me.
Ah.
So how to control our mind?
So where does mine go to?
Somewhere or the other.
Uh-huh. Tell me.
Any means not with me, just roaming here and there.
When it's thinking of here and there, What kind of feeling do you get? What happens inside of you?
If I want to sleep, I won't get sleep. Mm-hmm. I will sleep, I think that my mind is just roaming here and there, something or the other. What he is doing, what she is doing, like that.
Right. And there's a certain feeling of freedom in that, isn't there? Oh yeah, I wonder what she's doing. And it feels good, doesn't it? And we feel connected to that person. So, if you begin to connect that feeling of freedom, of being with God, so just imagine for a moment, just God is the best.
Not with God, actually. Just, normally I'm in the ashram.
Correct.
I left my children in the home.
Yes.
They are in the home.
So you're
thinking of them.
That's right. So instead of thinking of them, because you feel a certain freedom and even a certain happiness in thinking about them. So if you think about God in the same way that you would think about your children, very lovingly, very intimate, lots of joy, and you make that connection with God. God's not distant, it's like one of your children. Feel so much love, so much closeness, intimacy. And when you think of God in that way, what do you experience? What do you feel?
I never experienced that.
But if you try, in this moment...
I'm not such a great person that I should do all that. I'm just...
So that's
my beginning, I think.
See, that's how the ego mind enters. I'm not such a great person. And that's actually ego. Now we think, oh, I'm not such a great person. Isn't that humility? No, it's not. Because humility is surrender to God. That's actually arrogant. Oh, I'm not such a great person. Doesn't sound arrogant, does it? But it is. Because it keeps us separate from God. So, if you overcome that, and just think of baby Krishna. Such a lovely little boy. Can be naughty, huh? Can be naughty, but such a lovely little boy. And you just think of that in the same way you think about your children. What do you feel then?
Just love, happiness.
Yes. Yes. So you develop a relationship with God like that. To where when you think about God, you feel that love. You feel that happiness, feel that freedom, that joy.
How to control our minds?
See, when you think, when you have happiness and love and joy with thinking of God, you don't have to control your mind. You want to think that way.
No, when we are thinking of God, when we are taking Ramnam. But when we are taking Ramnam, we are not with Papa actually. We are somewhere else. The worries of worldly things.
Then think of God as those worldly things. Oh God, in the form of whatever it is. Wherever your mind is going, say, God in the form of that.
How can this do, sir?
Why not? Why not? The mind holds itself back, doesn't it? We feel, oh, I'm not sure about that. You know, we think about, oh, I'd like to go shopping. So much fun to go shopping. Oh, God, in the form of shopping. You insert God into that. And then you feel that it's God experience going shopping. Or, oh, God, in the form, oh, it's going to be so lovely to see my little ones. Oh, when I see them again, it'll feel so much love. Oh, God, in the form of my children. You see, you don't have to fight it that way. You insert God. It's like the prayer, where the two, you bring the current of God into your worldly thoughts. And you think, okay, oh, God, in the form of my children. When Mother Hamilton was here, and Papa said, you have to throw everything into the ocean. You have to let go of everything. Well, she was most attached to her children and her husband. So she said, all right. So So in her mind, everything went into the ocean of God. All right, I surrender everything in there. Gave it all. Then she went through all of these very powerful God experiences. But as she was coming out of those experiences, she had a doubt. And she went to Papa and she says, Papa, she says, I've gone through these experiences. I feel God so much. But I find that I love my children and my husband more than ever. More than ever. And Papa said, you know what Papa said? He said, can you see God in them? Can you see God in them? And she said, yes, Papa, of course I can. He said, then, love God. See? Love God. Can you see God in your children? Joy, happiness, smiles, well, sometimes temper tantrums and, you know, everything. Can you see God in them? Yes. Then love God. Then love God. And then you don't have to fight your thoughts. God's very close then. Very near, very dear. Doesn't have to be far away. Just like that. It's not difficult then, is it? And you don't have to fight your mind in that way. You just add the confluence of God to whatever it is that you're thinking of. And the magic of that, if it's an improper thought, it'll lose its power when you add God into it. Somehow it doesn't have any power on you anymore. When you say, oh, love God as my children, that's not hard. That's easy. See? So now you're chanting, oh, I'm thinking about my children. Oh, God is my children. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram, Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Papa is my children and the hearts of my children. Shri Ram, Jai Ram. Now, it's not hard. Huh? It's not hard. And it can be like that. When I came here, Papa gave me some experience, and every person that I saw Papa here. And when you see God in every person, then no person can be outside of God, no matter how they behave. Oh, that fellow, he's walking right next behind me in the mandir, and he's off key, and he's singing slow, and that's Papa singing there. No problem. No problem. So you just mix into the confluence God experience, God thought. Oh, God, in the form of that. Oh, I've been thinking about buying this new car. Oh, when I get this new car, oh, I'm going to be so proud driving around. God in the form of this new car. And then maybe, oh, the car's not so important. I just feel God now.
When we get sorrow in our mind.
Even when pain comes. Oh, God, you've come to me in the form of this pain. Oh, my knee. Oh, my elbow. Oh, my back. Oh, God, you're coming to me in this form. When you add that confluence into it, it changes that. That doesn't mean that you can't visit the doctor and go to Dr. Bimla and say, oh, I got this pain, what do I do? But immediately, you add that into the confluence. Oh, God, you're coming to me in this form of pain right now. Well, it changes your relationship with that pain. And what happens is first, you don't have any fear. Then you have some peace. And then you feel some joy. Now you may still have a pain in your joint because something's wrong with your body. But it's not just pain any longer. No fear. There's this sense of bliss and joy and peace. that can come with it. And then, you know, the 80% of pain is in our mind. Is it going to get worse? How bad is this going to get? Is it going to continue on? What does this mean? Maybe I got this or that or the other kind of thing. 80% of the pain is in the head. 20% in the body. Well, when we feel God within that pain, suddenly it doesn't become so big. It takes away that 80%. 20% can still be there. But now we've got this peace, this bliss, this joy as well. See, the wonderful thing about this, God is very practical. Just the way that we live in our body, it helps us in every element, every aspect. There's nothing that isn't helped. All God's blessings upon you. Papa, Mataji, Swamijis, Brother Hamiltons. May you be filled with the bliss and joy and love of God. Never again separate from Him, but always at one. Om Sri Ramde. Victory to God. Victory to the light. And thank you for allowing me to come and perform my Dharma.